Welcome to DC Animated Adventures, presented by The Night Nerd. This is the podcast where we break down the DC Animated Universe, from Batman the Animated Series to Justice League Unlimited, one episode at a time. We're your hosts, Derek.
And Lance, and today we're looking at The Terrible Trio.
Kind of feel like there's a hint about the episode in that title.
We had some good off-mic conversations about The Terrible Trio.
We really did.
Let's see what that does to it. I mean, we've been talking about this episode off mic for a while.
Yeah.
I know on mic, you know, we really hyped up Almost Got Him. Mm-hmm. There's been a few episodes. And then even some bad episodes that we were kind of dreading.
Right.
This one we've let kind of fly under the radar.
It's true.
You know, and as we've gone on, I'm trying to find a segue here and I just don't have one today. I apologize. I was going to maybe go for, you know, we've been talking about these things and, you know, all these shows we've been building up and going in order, and that's what we do. But I feel like that's a little weak.
That was a bit of a stretch. Yeah, yeah. You've done better. I've heard you do better.
Yeah.
I appreciate the effort, but yeah, I don't think there's a proper segue on this, man.
Yeah. And words are hard right now for me.
Your phone is blowing up, by the way.
It is. Nobody likes me until I need to get stuff done. And then people, I don't know.
We come crawling out of the woodwork.
Yeah. You know, that's how it is, though. Like, you can sit there, and your phone will not ring for a day. And then if you're trying to talk to somebody, that's when you start getting calls and texts and everything. We should probably talk about Terrible Trio.
Yeah.
Not to give away how much we want to talk about this episode.
We should jump into it.
Yeah.
So what disc of the volume 3 are we on, my friend?
We are on disc 3 of volume 3.
Heck yeah.
We are light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes.
And we're really about to start getting into the new adventures and just like,
which are new for you. They're not going to be new for me.
Yeah.
They're going to be new for you. Also, so not by release date, but by recording date, we've been doing this for about a year. Because we started recording way before we launched in January.
We did.
So
we did. It was around October-ish.
Was it October? I thought it was September. Oh, well.
I think we started spitballing ideas in September. Okay. Yeah, I think this show, the ideas started around this time.
Okay.
Which I am glad you mentioned that, though, because we will mention this on next show. Right now, this show is on the Night Nerds RSS feed. Along with The Night Nerd and Blah Blah Comics, Blah Blah Curse Words.
What?
And Family Sound, a bunch of other great shows. But in celebration of Batman Day on the 15th, we are launching our own channel just for DC Animated Adventures. And we're going to move the movie commentaries on there that were previously only on Patreon. We're going to have lots of good stuff. We're going to be giving away. I ordered it the other day. Because they upgraded it with a digital copy now of Batman. They dropped the price of the Blu-ray of the complete anime series, dropped it down to $85, and added digital copy.
Holy poop.
As Derek pulls out his phone and pulls up Amazon right now.
Best Buy, but yes.
Yeah. I don't know what Best Buy has it going for, but
that's true. I got to check, though, because I have... secrets behind the podcast, I have a Best Buy credit card, so a lot of my movie purchases I buy very specifically because I get to use a credit card.
I did, but I worked at Best Buy, and that's a dangerous combination.
Yeah, I can't even imagine.
Because what they don't tell you is that you can either do the no-interest financing or use your employee discount, but not both.
Ooh.
And so you get that first billion, and it's terrible. Almost a terrible trio.
Boom.
There we go.
Boom.
All right. Fire up those DVD players. We've wasted 4 minutes just not talking about this episode. Fire up those DVD players. Let's watch The Terrible Trio in 3, 2, 1, play. I find out if I use the keys, it works a lot better.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah. So here we have The Terrible Trio. This was the 71st episode produced, 86th aired. It was the first episode of season 4, technically. Aired September 11th, 1995. It story by Alan Burnett and Michael Reeves, with the teleplay by Michael Reeves, directed by Frank Parr.
Those are all names we're pretty familiar with.
Yeah, the, you know, kind of that. I hate to say B team or JV squad, because, but you know, if you look at Deanie and Tim as the guys, these are definitely the, if it was an FBI board, their pictures would be the second row for right. sure.
And no foul in being second row.
Oh no, not at all. Voice cast on this thing. Let's see if I have time to get through it real quick. We have Bill Mummy as the Fox, who was on Babylon 5, and he was Will Robinson on Lost in Space. David Joliffe, who's the Vulture, he was Bernie for a billion episodes on Room 222. Peter Scolari, who's the Shark, he's actually, and that's not a bad title card.
I think this is a pretty cool title card.
With the moving letters.
Yeah, the moving letters is really unique, and those images are appropriately creepy, I feel.
Yeah, Peter Scolari is Commissioner Loeb on Gotham right now. He was Wayne Szalinski on the Honey, I Shrunk the Kid TV series, and Michael Harris on Newhart. Christine Hage is Rebecca. She was on Head of Class forever. And we have Hector Elizondo as Sheldon Fallbrook, who was Bane in The Mystery of Batwoman. And he'll be back as Lieutenant Krager in Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. And he's just amazing. So retro nostalgia cast on this voice cast here is amazing.
Absolutely.
And I really like these gadgets they have here. They're not quite Batman level, but for the characters they are. And this bit right here, it's a very Newton Boys bit where they're like, hey, here's some money. We're robbing you, but we're not robbing you.
You, right.
And I think it could be an interesting way to take the characters and some cool stuff, because as we learned off mic, these characters have been around for a long time.
A really long time. And they keep popping up in other Batman digital media. They had an episode of Batman the Brave and Bold. They had an episode of The Batman. They keep playing with these characters. And honestly, in pretty much the same way this show does, in that they get a one-off episode, but they do get, you know, an episode. I assume they weren't opening villains in Brave and the Bold. They may have been. I've seen every episode of Brave and the Bold, and I honestly don't remember.
They, you know, and I think it's interesting.
Robin Ring.
Yay. You know, there's a cool little moment, because normally it's Robin that goes and checks on the civilians and stuff, as we'll see next episode in Harlequinade. But I guess that allows for him to be in peril here in a second.
Right.
But, you know, these guys with Tom King using Kite Man a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
And Snyder using random people, you know. I feel like these people should, the Terrible Trio should pop back up in continuity.
Yeah, they should get another shot, possibly as a reimagined set of villains, which, again, in their pop culture, they have at one point been reimagined as, like, mutated Fox, Vulture, Shark. But for the most part, they do just remain criminals with an animal-themed mask.
This is another episode that I think you could do the cold opening, you know, which normally the Batman episodes that we've seen up until this point, they're, I mean, you still have your Act 1, Act 2, Act 3, but this one, that's almost like a soft opening right there that you could have and then have the thing.
See, that's a good detective bit. I also like Robin's Mardi Gras comment. I feel like that kind of appropriately labels the level of villainy that we're seeing here. These are definitely not major league threats, but they are enough of a threat that Batman feels like, you know, he should get involved.
Yeah.
I think that's cool. That's a good setup for especially some off characters.
Sorry to interrupt you here, problem. But I feel like, I mean, I know skeet shooting is a thing. Like, I've gone skeet shooting. Like, it's fun, but Batman doesn't use a gun, but Bruce Wayne does?
Well, I mean, if you want to go all the way back to the Jason Todd episode, whose name is suddenly escaping me for some reason.
Underdwellers?
Underdwellers, yeah.
Your favorite episode ever of all time.
my surprise enjoyment episode of all time. You remember he had a whole gun cabinet that they had to do the gun safety PSA in. So we established then that at least the animated series Bruce Wayne knows his way around firearms. I also kind of feel like it's the whole Sherlock Holmes thing of, you know, studying gunpowders and various, you know, knowing what gun fires, what bullets fires, what powers,
etc. In the Nolan trilogy, you had that thing, you know, when he was shooting bullets into the thing. So I guess that's right.
It makes sense for Bruce Wayne to have...
That almost looks like a Legion ring.
Sorry. It did. It makes sense for Bruce Wayne to have some knowledge of guns, and I think it does help keep up his billionaire playboy status to occasionally do some skeet shooting. But yeah, even I'm not one of those people who's like Batman's a vegetarian, but I don't see Batman going hunting for sport.
No,
at best he would skeet shoot for sure.
Because I mean, it's still like hand-eye coordination.
Exactly,
it's still...
that's good training for what he's doing.
So Rebecca's character design here is, I feel like, is
eerily reminiscent of Mystery of the Batwoman, because that's what I'm getting.
Yeah, I was going to say it feels like a preview of what we're going to see in Batman Beyond, in Justice League, and like the new wave.
Much more angular, shorter hair. Yeah, you don't quite have the opposing triangles body that you get in something like Batman Beyond, but I can definitely see that for sure. Good call, man.
So it's no secret that these three are the terrible trio. Like,
right.
Even as a kid, it's like, oh, here's these three guys that we've never seen before.
Right.
After we just saw three villains we've never seen before.
And not just that, but the three villains and these three guys all have very affected, moneyed accents, as opposed to what, like, say, Kevin Conroy does with even Bruce Wayne. You know, his Bruce Wayne is chipper and ebullient, but all of these guys have a very Monopoly Man accent, and they're all talking...
Reggie.
Yes.
Yeah, it's... But see, so going back to that Newton Boys line that we talked about, but here they're very, you know, he's like, oh, you're awfully chummy with the help. I'm like, but just a second ago, you were trying to help out this average guy.
I don't think he was trying to help as much as he was just trying to flaunt his own wealth. Looking back, you know, in the moment, sure, it felt very Robin Hood-y. But, you know, the more we get into this episode, it more seems like, I've got so much money, I don't even need this money. I'm doing this for sport. Here you go, old chum. I'll give you some money, too. You go fritter it away on Pop-Tarts or record albums or something.
They would have been a great 66 villains.
They really would have. And I feel like they would have been recurring villains in a way that they just can't in, you know, a series like this or in a more modern day.
Hey, if we ever start our little writer's challenge again, we ought to try and write a Batman story with the Terrible Trio.
That's an excellent idea.
We may do that as a contest, folks. Send us some Terrible Trio story ideas, just ideas. And if it's like full scripts, even better.
Yes.
You'll get something.
You'll get a
sure.
prize. We're not sure what it is yet, but there will be a prize, and it will be handed to you.
To be out of town. So these guys, where are we at on time on this thing?
We're about halfway through, I think.
So, when you could just unplug the phone. I want to go ahead and start in the conversation now, because we have some stuff to get into later on that we've talked about, characters like Two-Face and the parallels with the Bruce Wayne Batman thing, and even Mr. Freeze about his parallels. These guys straight up are Bruce Wayne Batman, just bad guys.
Without a conscience. Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's why this could be they'd be interesting characters to look at, because what separates them, because as we're about to see, they don't do it for the money. They do it just for the thrill.
They are bored.
Yeah. And I think if they went more the Robin Hood angle, that would be really fascinating. Like, yeah, they're robbing people, but they're turning around and giving it to people.
Right.
So my question to you is, in this scenario, you know, where do you think, I mean, aside from here's a pearl necklace, that's a project we can announce pretty soon.
Yes.
that you know, that point of that these guys decided, hey, we're just, you know, where they got different, the difference there. You guys know what I'm saying?
Well, I think to pull a Jack Kirby on this a little bit, it's nature versus nurture. These guys, I feel like this Batman as a character definitely subscribes to the nature end of that equation, in that Bruce Wayne was always going to be a good person. I really feel like in the few alternate realities where we've seen where Bruce does have parents, for the most part, Bruce is not a vapid socialite. He's actually a pretty decent guy even then. You know, he does like, you know, he's always like engaged to Selina and contributing to charities and trying to carry on his dad's work if his dad's just retired as opposed to dead. He's a good dude, and he would have been a good dude even if, you know, the terrible tragedy hadn't befallen him. Whereas these gentlemen have had the entire world handed to them on a silver platter, and they couldn't care less. Their natures are that they are bad guys. You know, had their parents been murdered in front of them in a similar way, or had any kind of similar tragedy befell them, they would have probably, you know, not to be crass, these guys probably would have used it as an excuse to
become,
you know,
hush.
No, or even in a more real world aspect of it, just be, you know, get into drugs, get into alcohol, get into, you know, abusive relationships, or become abusers, and then use that as their personal tragedy as an excuse, as opposed to trying to seek the help that they needed, or as young Bruce Wayne did, vow to destroy all crime forever.
And you know, I never realized like the hush comparison until I just mentioned that, but. You know, to Tommy Wayne, or Tommy Elliot, sorry, mm-hmm. was kind of the same way.
I literally just reread Hush.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, there was it's way over by the time this airs, but there was a Jim Lee digital sale on Comixology, and the first thing I did was buy the complete Hush, because I've been wanting to revisit it. And that story has story problems. Like, Jeff Loeb has some peculiarities and misgivings as a writer. I have said before that I feel like Jim Lee was trying to show who he was again when he was drawing that. And I will say again, it's not just every page, every cover. Every single panel seems designed to be iconic.
Yeah.
There is something going on in there to remind you that he is Jim M.F. and Lee in that book. And yeah, it was a delight. Sorry.
Oh, no. We love talking about
tangent,
Hush.
But...
And we talk about, you know, how iconic that series is. And I think, you know, you're right, because... I think if you were to look at the history of DC advertising, I don't think another story has been used more. Like, the images have been used more than Hush when it comes to advertising for DC and things.
Because it's that Jim Lee artwork is so... like I say, every single panel is built to be iconic. And he gets to draw everybody. And that's something that Jeff Loeb does, is he really likes to cater to the artists that he has.
That's why the Batman Superman book was...
Yeah,
beautiful.
Exactly. But like when he did the X-Sanction Cable miniseries leading up to Avengers versus X-Men, Ed McGuinness was drawing it, and he's like, I want to draw Wolverine in this costume. So for no reason, Wolverine puts on that costume just to give him an excuse to do it. So I'm pretty sure Jim Lee was like, I just want to draw everybody. Just everybody you can give me. So Loeb wrote a story around that.
Yeah.
Because again, Jim Lee wanted to show off. He wanted to prove that he was still Jim Lee. Like, there are arguably three generations of the greatest living comic, or the greatest comic artist in the world: Jack Kirby, Neil Adams, and Jim Lee.
Yeah.
People who changed superhero comics as a medium. And I think Jim Lee, when he went to DC, he at least one more time wanted to show that he could still be that.
So. Oh, I could. As much as I don't like him, I would almost put Frank Miller in that category too.
Yeah, I guess if you want to go 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, I think you could put Frank Miller for the
90s. Daredevil and
Dark Knight Returns.
Dark Knight Returns,
yeah.
And Year One and everything.
Year One was David Mazzucchelli.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Here we have, you know, we're starting to realize who all these people are, that like their actual intentions. And I feel like Bill Mummy had the. Fox / Warren dude. Well, I just want to call him Will Robinson all the time. Like, he's genuinely bad dude.
Yeah.
The other two, meh.
The other two are callow and selfish.
Yeah.
And they're following along Bill Mummy's. But he's clearly the leader. And yeah, he's clearly the sociopath of the three. I hate that line. You and I talked about this off mic, and that's the one I really want to point out. The Joker is not the villain you use for that comparison.
No. Like, there's madness. Like, there's different levels of it.
Right.
And the Joker is somebody who... Next episode, he just buys an atom bomb just right. because he wants to.
I was going
to
say, even in this show, his insanity is so far beyond measure. If you wanted to make a comparison, the Mad Hatter is the perfect comparison in this bit. I realize why they went with the Joker, because it's iconic, and if you're just watching the animated series, it's like, oh yeah, I know who the Joker is. Yeah. But just if you're actually looking at character comparisons, Batman would never never say the Joker as an excuse for anything. The Batman would never use the Joker as a comparison piece, because the Joker is so far beyond comparing to.
Yeah. Danger, Will Robinson. See, and so here, this kind of reminds me a little bit of the Fire from Olympus episode, where Maxi Zeus's henchmen were like, "Hey, boss,
yeah,
you're going a little far here.
We've had some fun, but yeah, let's not electrocute Gothamites for no reason." I really like her, because I really like her kind of. Callow again.
Does this rag smell like chloroform? Best pickup. No, I'm joking. Sorry. Go ahead.
No worries. Just her kind of shallowness or callowness at the beginning of the episode, but she kind of reveals that maybe that was kind of an act to attract a guy that and it feels very high class. You know, this guy's hot, so I'm going to play dumb, and maybe we can hook up
and be a spoiled little rich girl. And
right.
Like, oh,
but that's
daddy,
not who she really
daddy.
Is in the end. And I kind of like that about her.
This is a great little. That looks almost exactly like the Action Comics car.
I can totally see that,
and especially at that angle.
As much noise as this is making, it wouldn't have been silent before. That kind of bugs me.
Yeah, but
it's a neat reveal, but you kind of have to put.
Maybe
audio...
that it's pulling the thing. It has to like kick engines into overdrive.
Okay, I'll give it that. Because I mean, the Batwing is pretty stealthy.
Yeah.
So I'll give it that.
I love the glider suit. I know it's just... the glider suit is such a... Hey, we need to sell toys and we need a random thing for him to get around on.
Yeah, also the fact that it just makes him a giant target for weaponry.
Yeah.
Seems kind of... I mean, it was a great reveal jumping out of the Batwing like that. That was great. But the fact that he's still on it, the fact that he's been shot at several times... makes it kind of ridiculous.
I like how that's the same shadow. Like,
yeah. But that Batman coming into focus like that was a really beautiful shot.
Even here, like, we had Fox was the guy shooting at him. Mm-hmm. You know, the other guys didn't. I mean, you have Shark fighting him because he's kind of the brute. But Vulture, I hate to call him the Vulture because...
Right, that's a copyright infringement.
Yeah. He's like, nope, I'm just getting out of here. And that's how, I mean, that's, oh, yeah, I have some, when we get into final thoughts, I think we're going to have some interesting things to say about this episode.
Yeah, I agree. I really do like the snow. I think that's really cool. And they're doing some interesting things with it. I didn't point it out earlier. We were talking about Hush, but this episode has a lot of the everything's painted except for the characters moments. And that includes when Batman first visits the woman's dad in the hospital, he's a painted background for a minute.
Yeah.
And that was super distracting to me.
Yeah. We're all about the bat shadows.
It's really playing with the iconography of the bat shadow in this episode. And I don't blame it because, I mean, he's fighting animal-themed villains, so they're kind of playing with his animal theme a little bit more than usual. That's a neat little, like, subtextual thing. I don't hate it.
Yeah.
That aspect of it.
It's.
I feel like this fight kind of drags on a little long. Like, I feel like this episode was probably short. Like, why didn't Batman just jump off the snow, whatever that is? He could have jumped way earlier than he did. He kept trying to get control of it, and then he kind of used the fake out of, is Batman still on it? Oh, no, he jumped off. He could have jumped off as soon as he knocked Fox off of it.
That, his ears are a little weird in that shot, but the rest of him is pretty solid. And
this is great.
I was like, you have something to say about this scene.
This is brilliant.
So we talked to off mic about this.
Yeah, yeah. I was just letting it play out because I wanted people to hear it. And he is full of crap. Ultimately, justice is served. And yeah, there's I really, really like that ending that he is just, you know, mouthing off and you know, being the spoiled rich guy and having, again, you know, being so used to having the everything handed to him on a silver platter, knowing that he can get out of
this. I wish that dude would have winked or blown a kiss or something.
Yeah, it's a little, yeah.
But you can't do that.
Into Mallrats, but yeah. But yeah, that bit right there where he's so completely shot down and shut down for, you know, from his own beliefs. That is a great moment in the episode. Probably the best moment in this episode. Really, really strong. You and I talked about it a lot off mic. I wish I could remember more what I said then. But yeah, that to me was an incredibly strong beat.
Yeah.
And I really like how this episode ends. Pretty sure it's your final thought to start with.
So I didn't have fond memories of this episode. I thought it had terrible in the title for a reason. Revisiting it, you know, it's not the strongest episode. It's really not. Talking about it and breaking it down and kind of looking at these characters and how they affect, you know, not how they affect Bruce Wayne, but how they parallel Bruce Wayne and some really cool stylized moments. I mean, watch it. You know, it's not a hard recommend or anything like that, but it's definitely not a pass. It's a fun, borderline campy episode,
but not campy enough. And I can say that because we did that thing where we've watched a few episodes and we're going to record a bulk of episodes at a time. And there's a way campier 66 influenced episode coming up soon that I am very excited to talk about. Whether or not it holds up, I'm not going to get into that, but I am excited to talk about it regardless.
Yeah.
So and if you don't mind me taking from there, I kind of agree. I wish the campiness had been a little bit more developed because, this is another thing I told you off mic, it took me 3 watches to get through all of this episode. I couldn't sit down and watch it in one sitting. I found it dull. But the weird thing is, it's not bad. It's not an actively bad episode, and I remembered it being an actively bad episode. Instead, it's just a dull episode that I just did not have a good time with. Does that make it a pass? I'm not sure.
Is it a fail?
But it's not a fail, and that's the thing. I kind of want to go with yours and just say watch it, just so that you can form your own opinion on it. It may not be as bad as you remember it. It may not be as good as we are kind of making it sound. I'm genuinely not sure. I'm really still weirdly on the fence about this one.
Yeah, but it's not a meh. You know, we've had some episodes that I'm just indifferent on, and right. I definitely have an opinion, and it leans to the positive, and I think it's, you know, I mean, is it top 25? No. Is it bottom 25? No. Like,
it might be bottom 25 for me.
Out of 100 episodes?
Maybe. Really? But even then, it'd be at like number 76 or 77. It'd be at the top of the bottom. So, I mean, there have been far, far worse. I just, every time I get to we get to a episode where I'm like, man, I remember this being terrible from when I was a kid. I hope for another Underdwellers where I'm just shocked at how much I find something new in there to appreciate, regardless of the overall quality of the episode. There's something in there that I appreciate, that I enjoy, or maybe my memory's tainted like Tiger Tiger, and I'm just like, oh, I conflated it with this other terrible Catwoman episode when it's actually a very good episode on its own. And I did not do either of those with this one.
Yeah, I can't disagree. Like I said, there's just enough good little animation, good little character beats, Rebecca's design, you know, that kind of glimpse into the future type
thing. And I really like that ending. So I'll lock in on you with that one. Yeah, for sure.
I don't know. Let us know what you think about it. Find us on social media. Just look for DC Animated Adventures. You can email us, dcaa@thenightnerd.com. We'd love to hear from you, hear what you have to think. I don't know.
It's a shrug, and it's not a shrug of indifference. It's a shrug of I'm not sure. I do not know how to put this one. I do not know how to categorize this. This is uncategorizable.
I'm thinking of that scene in Dude, Where's My Car, where Andy Dick is in the jail. He's like, uncategorizable. He's like, hey, what? Uncategorizable. Sorry.
I've actually never seen Dude, Where's My Car.
It's not a bad movie.
That's what I hear. My wife likes it.
Like, kind of like this. Like, you're going to like it or you're not.
Yeah.
And it's enjoyable and it's quotable. But that's going to do it for us today. We've had enough rant. This is a very ranty show.
No joke.
We probably had some terrible rants, but terrible show. But yeah, tune in next time. Thank you for listening. But tune in next time when we break down Harley Quinnade. Who's in that one?
Pretty sure the Joker shows up.
I bet you can find a book about that, the main character somewhere.
I think that's definitely possible.
What's the name of it? We'll just go ahead and plug it. We've gone down the rabbit hole this far.
What is that, the name of it? Ascension of Harley Quinn, Essays on DC's Enigmatic Villain.
Featuring stories by our very own Derek Moreland.
Hee hee.